Humanity's Children. A true story taken from the files of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, dramatized by Stanley Wright, and narrated and produced in Geneva by Wilfred Thomas in cooperation with UNESCO. Humanity's Children.
I'm Wilfred Thomas. I've got a story here I want you to help me finish. I'm a steam radio man. I move around the world quite a bit in my job, recording the music and the stories of the people and trying to capture on reels of coated tape the sounds of our time. And that's how I came across this story. Somewhere along the line, somewhere in Europe, I was tipped off about a balalaika orchestra that was worth hearing. So I tracked it down. You know what a balalaika is, don't you? Sort of guitar, I suppose. You'd say a Russian instrument. And when a bunch of the boys get whooping it up, they sound like this. That's it. That's the recording I made in the refugee camp where I found the band, sitting in the barrack canteen, and pretty cold and chill as it was, too. The fellas in the band looked shabby and scruffy. They were refugees, men from the four corners of Europe, brought together by the accidents of war. I said to the leader, a long-bearded type named Joseph, "Yes, you play well, all right, but the sound's a bit thin, wants filling out. Haven't you got any more players?" And he said, "Well, there were nine of us, but now, as you see, there are only five. What happened to the others?" Well, that's what the story's all about. So we'd better begin on the cold spring day 5 years ago, when they played together for the first time, a day on which summer and winter blended, gaiety and sadness. For on that day, a group of refugees had left the camp forever. After long negotiation, they'd been accepted for resettlement in America, Canada, Australia. And the buses had carried them off to the port, to the ships, to a new life.
Mr. and Mrs. Luce and two children. Borotsky, bachelor. Mrs. Coron and little daughter. Right, that's the lot. Okay, move on.
Let's know what it's like over there.
Bye. Bye. See you soon.
Well, that's that. Good luck to them. Coming, Paul.
Where are you going?
To Kosovo. She's just said goodbye to her children, you know. They're off to America.
Do you think she'll ever see them again?
Oh, how should she? The doctors wouldn't pass her. She'll never get her visa.
How's she taking it?
Her eyes are dry, but... well, I can't bear to look in them. That's being brave, I suppose. But what else can she do? There's not a corner where she can be left alone.
How can we help her? Well, let's play some music, Josef. Let's sing and dance and make her smile again.
That's the stuff. Fetch a balalaika. Let's round up everyone with a balalaika. Tonight we'll have a concert, and Cosima shall be guest of honor.
It may not be much, but it might help.
Well, that's how the orchestra began. After that, they played often, to fill the empty hours, to create in the dreary barracks which was their home, a sort of a dream time, when they were all as young as their document said they were. A time of forgetting the passing of the hopeless years, you know? Once in a while, they'd play in a tavern and earn a little bit of money. But their great idea was to get away to a job and a home of their own. First to lose patience, the first of the little band to break away, was Ludovnik. One day, Joseph was sitting on his bunk, staring into space and remembering a time of peace, remembering the village he feared he would never see again, when Ludovnik, with his wife Maria, came to see him.
I'm sorry, Joseph. I can't go on.
Oh, what's happened now?
We've just come from the clinic. They discovered that patch on my lung. It's been there ever since I had pneumonia when I was 12. But no visa for me. I asked this doctor fellow, does that mean I've got to rot in this camp? What does the patch matter? I'm a radio operator. Of course, I know he can't help it. Rules are rules.
I'm sorry, Ludovnik. This is a blow.
But it's all humbug what these doctors say. I know that when we get to a country and they see what we are like, they won't send us away. The thing is to get there. That's what I told Ludovnik.
All right, but how would you get there?
We've thought it all out. I'll get a job on a ship, and perhaps they'll take Maria too. She can cook and darn and wash for the crew. We'll take our little daughter, and we'll find a country for ourselves.
How are you going to get to the port? We've none of us enough money to buy a train ticket, even.
We'll walk.
Very early next morning, Ludovnik and Maria, with their little daughter, Tanya, each carrying the cardboard suitcase that held all they possessed, left the camp. 3 weeks later, a letter arrived for Joseph, a most unusual event.
Who in the wide, cold world could be writing to me? Oh, of course, it's Maria. Let's see. Dear friend Joseph, here is wonderful news. We're leaving tomorrow. Ludovnik has found a job as a radio operator on a cargo ship, and I'll be the cook for the crew. We don't know where we're going, but we're on our way.
Well, Ludovnik, you still have time to leave the ship.
Captain, we're determined to try our luck. You haven't changed your mind, have you?
Changed my mind? Why should I? The owners of this ship don't care about anything that happens to me or any of the crew, as long as I keep this rusty old tea kettle afloat. I won't change my mind. But do you realize these papers of your husband's are no good?
They are good papers, Captain. They're official. I got them from the camp commandant.
Of course, they're good papers now. But what happens in 12 months' time? Look yourself. It says valid for 1 year only. Who's going to renew them? I can't.
We'll have found a country to settle in long before the year's up.
I hope you're right. Well, it's no business of mine. You're welcome on the ship as long as you're a good cook. We cast off tomorrow morning, early tide.
Well, Maria?
Well?
Afraid?
A little.
We've no choice. We've been lucky so far, haven't we? Here we are on this ship with the world before us, instead of in the camp where all we could do was sit and wait. We'll find a place, Maria. Our luck'll hold. It must hold.
And did they find a place? Well, their ship called at many a fine port, but no official would let them land. They might have been criminals. They might have had the plague.
Sorry, your papers are not in order. You have no visa.
I know. I only want to land to see the authorities. You see, I have my wife and daughter...
You are stateless. I can't even issue a landing permit.
But I only want to...
I'm sorry. Rules are rules. Next, please.
Time passed. The months added up to a year. 2 years. 3 years. Little Tanya fell ill in a British port. She was taken ashore. And her mother and her father watched them carry her away, not knowing whether they would ever see her again, for once more they were refused permission to land.
Sorry, these papers are no longer valid. We can't let you in.
From port to port of the free world, the nightmare voyage went on. Crews were changed, cargoes were discharged, and new cargoes loaded, but the radio operator and his wife never left the ship.
Are you writing to Tanya?
Not tonight. Tonight I'm trying to put into words our last hope.
Hope? Is there such a thing left?
In the newspapers from the last port. Did you see them?
What does it matter to us what goes on in the world?
In the papers there was a bit about people like us. People with no country. There's a man to look after us. A High Commissioner for Refugees. So I'm writing this letter to him.
A letter?
Well, what harm can it do?
Read it, Ludovnik.
I say, All we want is a small place for shelter and work enough to keep us alive. But our home is a ship, and we must always come to port without ever setting foot on shore. We have no land where we have a home, and no land will let us in even for a short time. Something should be done, but how and who should do it, I don't know. Please help.
Is that all?
Well, if I say more, will it have more meaning?
No. You write our story very well. You really mean to send it?
I'll ask the captain to mail it at the next port.
In an office in Geneva, Ludovnik's letter was read. Arrangements were made with the Home Office in London, and 6 months later, Maria and Ludovnik were given a visa, a simple piece of paper, which allowed them to join their daughter in England. There, they've started life afresh. But Ludovnik's story started something else. Today, a great number of countries are ready to accept an agreement to help the many hundreds of refugee seamen who, like Ludovnik, may be prisoners on board their ships. That's how Joseph lost the best player in his Balalaika band. Now, there were 8. The second to go was Dimitri. Time after time, Dimitri had been before migration missions. Time after time, he'd passed medicals and interrogations. But always, the examiner would come to one little entry in his file, would look at Dimitri with a cold stare, and would reach for the rejection stamp. For once upon a time, Dimitri was mixed up in a cafe brawl. Nothing serious, a few tables overturned, a few black eyes, but the police stepped in, and Dimitri didn't get away in time. He spent a week in jail. So, he had a criminal record. One morning, word went round the refugee camp that Dimitri was missing. Somehow he'd slipped across the frontier, hoping to find a job in another country. But he'd forgotten one thing, that a man to have any rights must have papers. This is what happened to him.
Hey, you, wake up, wake up.
What's the matter?
What's the meaning of this? You're not allowed to sleep on a bench in this park.
I'm sorry.
How did you get here?
I visited a friend late last night. We had a glass, and on my way I sat on this bench, and I must have fallen asleep.
Is that so? Show me your papers.
Wait a moment. I must have left them at home.
Oh, you did you? All right, what's your address?
Oh, now listen, officer. I haven't done anything wrong, have I? Sleeping on a bench isn't a crime. Now, can't you just let me go on? I'm just looking for work.
Looking for work? Maybe we have some work for you at the police station. Come on, we'll see what you can tell our chief officer.
For having penetrated on the territory of the kingdom without legally recognized travel documents and without a visa, and being without known address and being found guilty of vagrancy, 30 days imprisonment. After which time, the name stateless Dmitry Rosnov shall be expelled from the territory of the realm, not to return thereon on penalty of further imprisonment, not to exceed 90 days.
Well, this is as far as we go. You see that path?
Yeah.
Follow it for 300 yards. That's the frontier. Then you turn to the left and keep to the woods. Nobody will see you. Keep going from there on and it'll be all right. Now, good luck to you. And don't come back.
But Dimitri had no luck. He was seen and given 30 days for illegal crossing of the border and then pushed back. And this happened again and again.
Dimitri, you've been before me 7 times. What are we going to do with you?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Well, what does the probation officer have to suggest?
I've written to the office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees.
And what's he got to say?
I've a letter from him here. His representative in this country is taking it up with the Ministry of the Interior, and we hope that everything will be all right soon. He also got in touch with the Ministry of Labour, and I received this note from the local Labour office.
Let me read it, please.
In the meantime, is allowed to take up employment either in the textile or mining industry. Please have him call at this office between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. No, that seems all right. Well, Dmitri, I think that this time we'll give you a chance. Pending the regulation of your position, we charge you to present yourself to the police every week until your residence permit is issued. Next case, please.
And so Dmitri found a job and a new country. But just as important was the result of his appeal to the High Commissioner. Dmitri was not the only man in need of papers, work permits, travel documents. Today, a convention exists which guarantees every refugee his basic rights as a human being. But let's come back to our story of the Balalaika band. Dmitri gone, well, Joseph had lost his second player. Now, there were seven. The fate of Paul and Nicholas, two more of the band, was linked through Sonia, the daughter of Nicholas.
Paul, may I come in? I want to talk to you.
What is it, Sonia?
Why are you angry with me? I must know. Whenever you're with my father and I come in, you find an excuse to leave. People have come to notice it. What have I done, Paul? At one time you were different.
I'm not angry with you.
Then why do you avoid me?
Do you really want me to tell you?
I'd much rather you were frank with me.
Well, you must know. What can a man like me offer you? I have no job, no home, no future.
Why must you think of all these things? Can't we just be ourselves? One day we shall be ordinary people again.
How do you know? I had a promise a year ago that I could go to Australia. In the meantime, I have seen a Brazilian mission, a Canadian mission, and I am still waiting.
We are both healthy. You have a trade and I can do secretarial work. I've even learned how to make hats and dresses. I could go to America any time I wanted.
But you are still here.
And you know why. Father needs me. Oh, why think of all this? I love you.
But we must.
Don't think, darling. Don't think.
They couldn't marry, but in a refugee camp, you can't keep secrets. One night, the Balalaika band went to play at a local tavern, and Sonia's father drank rather more than he could stand.
Listen, everybody. My family have always been respectable people. We had a farm and five servants, and every Sunday we went to church. We even had a priest to dinner. There was nothing ever to be said against us. But now, I am ashamed.
Please, Father, go home.
I am not going home. We are respectable people. Your mother would have died of shame if she had known what our daughter had become.
Father.
Isn't it true about you and Paul?
It's nobody's business, Father, what happens between Paul and me.
You are telling me that?
Yes, Father.
Nicholas!
How could you, when you know I can't marry Paul because of you?
Because of me? Hey, why? What have I got to do with it, eh? Did you ask me about you and Paul?
Isn't that. I don't want to chain Paul to this camp, but I can never go away with him as long as you live.
You can't go away with him as long as I live.
No. No. Don't say anything. I understand. Not a good girl, Sonia. A good girl.
Oh, Father, I'll never leave you. I promise you, Father, never, never.
Oh.
Sometime later, Paul received his visa to go to America. Nicholas went to see Paul.
I hear you have your visa to America.
Yes.
When are you going?
I don't know. The consul will write.
And what about Sonia?
She won't come.
You must marry her and take her with you.
I can't force her, can I? You think I'd like to leave her behind?
Then you must marry her and stay.
No. I'll marry her if she will come, but I won't stay.
Is that your last word, Paul?
Yes.
That's what I wanted to know.
That night, when all was quiet, Nicholas sat at the side of his bed and prayed God to forgive his sins and to bless his daughter and his beautiful native land. That's what he said in the letter they found the following morning on the table in his room after they discovered his body hanging from a rafter. Now there are five, for Paul and Sonia married and were accepted for migration. I wish I could tell you that Gregory and Stashek and the others, one by one, were saved from the waiting years. But real life is seldom as obliging as art. Truth weaves a crazy pattern. This is a story that has no end, as yet. Once there were nine men, now there are five. Five aging men, waiting in a camp of concrete and wood. Five of the many.
Yes, we're still waiting. Now and again we earn a little money by playing at a tavern, but our music, well, as you say, it's grown thinner, like ourselves. Thinner and sadder, too. We receive old clothes, toys for the children, from good people we don't know, and we're grateful. But we seem to live for no purpose. Each day takes one more grain off our dignity. We live on charity. We don't want to live on charity. We want a possibility to build a future for ourselves. And when we think of that, we're afraid.
They are afraid, the refugees, afraid they are forgotten, that they'll have to stay in the camps for the rest of their lives. And yet, today, there is hope. A four-year program has been started by the churches, the benevolent societies, and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. A program to give them jobs and homes, to put an end to the camps, to burn down the barrack huts with their history of misery engrimed upon the walls. But the refugees have been disappointed and bypassed too often to believe that their turn has come at last. And can you blame them? The United Nations program is not much more at present than a plan and a promise. Money has been brought together, but not enough money. Projects have been started, but not enough projects. That is why my story has no ending yet. I told it because on this day the world has to be reminded of a pledge it has made, and only partly fulfilled. It's inscribed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 14.
Everyone has the right to seek and to enjoy in other countries asylum from persecution. Article 25. Everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and his family, including food, housing, and medical care.
And yet, there are still 300,000 refugees in need, men, women, and children from many lands, victims of man's brutality. We may try to forget them, but they are there, our silent accusers, with their hurt and puzzled eyes. They are huddled together in crowded barracks and camps all over Europe, their strength and their talents being wasted. Why should they still be there? Well, very simply because when we, that's the United Nations in our name, resettled over 1 million refugees in new countries, we thought we'd done the job. It happens so often, doesn't it? We get sort of tired of a problem long before it's finally and fully solved. All the same, because of this, they are there. 300,000 of them. And they are our concern because of our promise. Because I suppose we're decent human beings. Mind you, I'm not saying that nothing's being done. Somewhere in Europe at this very moment, something like this is happening.
You told me over in the barracks you were in the church.
Oh, Mrs. Smith, I'd forgotten you were coming. You see, I'm putting this Christmas crib together.
Oh, I do like these models of the Holy Family. You carve them beautifully.
Well, in the old days in our country, I used to do a lot of carving. Every Christmas, we used to make cribs in the church and in our houses, and the women baked little cakes for the children on Christmas Day. In our country, Christmas is a real Christmas, you know, with plenty of snow, very crisp snow. And it's wonderful to be inside with all the decorations and gifts and good food around the fire and all the children, everybody merry and telling stories. Oh, well, it's quite different from what we know now.
Still, you make your church very beautiful.
I believe it's the only place where we still feel at home.
Do you know why I came to see you today? You told me some time ago that if you only had a small workshop where you could do your woodwork, and you had a machine and all the materials, you were sure you'd be able to fend for yourself.
Oh, one dreams sometimes, but I've given up dreaming. Once upon a time I thought of going to a new country, but nothing has come of that.
Well, what would you say if my agency were to give you a small loan?
So that I could start working and carving again. You might have to wait some time before I could repay.
That wouldn't worry me. My agency feels that you would be a very good investment indeed. We're quite sure that if we gave you this loan, you would pay it back. You see, with the money that you pay back, we can help other refugees.
You really mean that you'll give me a loan? This is going to be a fine Christmas after all. You know, I'm very bad at saying thank you.
You don't have to say thank you. Look at the crib. You see, Joseph and Mary, they too were refugees.
Well, there it is. A true story with an ending still to be told. A story of humanity's children.
Humanity's Children was written by Stanley Wright and narrated and produced by Wilfred Thomas with an international cast in the studios of Radio Genève. The balalaika music was recorded in the San Saba refugee camp in Trieste. The program was presented by UNESCO in cooperation with the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees.